everybody. Welcome to this episode of Putting Points on the Board. I'll be your host for today, Big John, joined, of course, by my majority-minority partner, I suppose, William Del Pilar.
You know, technically, according to leftists, I'm a minority of the minority because they're trying to classify us now as, well, California already does. You're either white, brown, black, whatever, Latino now.
You're
now,
not white. Let me reemphasize that. You're not white.
But see, that's actually, this, it has to be a topic for another day. But at the end of the day, we look at people with their skin color and we do make those type of decisions. Yeah. But yeah, you're
I think it's hilarious that the people who want inclusivity, supposedly, go to the greatest lengths to compartmentalize and separate people on the most superficial of understanding, right? So it's like,
exactly.
You're from Panama, therefore you have to be Latinx regardless.
Brown, or whatever.
Meanwhile, you're, like we've said, you're as dark or darker than me or lighter than me. You know, it depends on if we've been out in the sun. But regardless, good to have you along for this episode again, my friend. And we've got a lot to talk about.
Yes, we do.
Very quickly.
A lot of detail.
A lot of detail and a lot of interesting topics going on, especially in the NFL. So we're going to talk the two big trades in the NFL that just occurred. Deshaun Watson going to the Browns, Devontae Adams going to the Raiders. We also have a couple of sneaky, interesting NFL signings that I'd love to get your take on, William. Things that flew under the radar that we ourselves have mentioned on past episodes of this podcast. I'd like to see what you think about those. We have an update on Juicy Smollett.
Is he the new Texan starter?
He might be, for all I know. Some updates on one of your favorite pop culture topics, Juicy Smollett. And then, of course, we're going to bid farewell to a colleague, John Clayton, who we found out passed away yesterday. So let's kick off the show, William, by starting out with the most recent of the big trades, Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson being traded from the Texans to the Cleveland Browns of all teams. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. But Deshaun Watson traded the trade three number ones heading to Houston, along with a 2023 third, a 2024 fourth. And the Browns get the Browns get Deshaun Watson and a 2024 fifth. By many metrics, this is probably the biggest deal, if not one of the biggest, if not the biggest deals in NFL history, William. I mean, we had the Ricky Williams trade where Mike Ditka famously traded away all his picks one season for Ricky Williams. We had the Herschel Walker deal. But this one, I think, is even more impactful than that. First of all, just about the terms of the trade. What do you feel about that?
Well, the truth of the matter is, for the quality of Deshaun Watson, look, I am not a pro or con Deshaun Watson. As you know me, I'm heavily into identity politics on the political side, and Deshaun Watson has played into that. So somebody who watches sports, watched Colin Kaepernick, knew people who knew Kaepernick, talked about the person he was, yada, yada, yada. Fast forward to here. As you know, I believe Deshaun Watson escaped under the exemption clause because of the current politics at the time. And I didn't like that. Right. As a Latino, I always want equality across the board, regardless of issue, domestic violence, drugs, whatever, across the board. But that said, in crunching his numbers, this guy's a stud. We forget. We get so caught up, or at least people on my side, we get caught up politically from the hobby. We forget the man's a stud. So I think the Browns actually got a great deal here. I mean, they're giving up three first-round picks, but they are getting an elite quarterback along the molds of Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Steve Young. Well, not necessarily Aaron Rodgers. I'm trying to find quality QB.
You're trying to be realistic, yeah.
Yeah, Michael Vick. So those are – that's – you ask anybody, would you give three first-round picks up for a player like that? And I would wager to say 80% of the – league managers and teams would go, I mean, would you, John?
Look, it's one of those things. I would give up the three firsts. Because look, let's face it, we've seen what today's NFL is like. You can't have the equivalent of the Baltimore Ravens in 2000 when they won strictly on defense. And they won with a quarterback who wasn't going to turn over the ball. All he was a game manager. So strong running game, strong defense. That could get you a championship, theoretically.
Actually, it did. I mean, Tom Brady played lights out when he won his last Super Bowl, but he was a quasi-game manager playmaker. I think what you're saying is, in today's day and age, the single-layered team of quality defense with a pure-play game manager who you can't put the team on their back can no longer win it.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant.
I'll tell you, the Ravens could win today. The Ravens could win today with Dilfer, but Dilfer's exceptionally intellectual with football smarts.
Listen, I mean, there's always the chance, but if you were to build the team, which is what these GMs are doing now, right? Every 2-3 years, if you're not on the right track, you got to reset.
I agree with you, even though I don't agree with that philosophy. But look, I don't want to get off track though.
But the answer was yes, I would pay the 3 first round picks. Because I think you need it now.
Hold on. Yeah. The question is, okay, we agree on that, but would we agree to give him a fully guaranteed?
That was going to be my next point. That's the part I disagree with. They reworked his contract. That's part two of this. So they reworked his contract, and he's getting $230 million over the next 5 years.
And has never won anything, including 2 playoff losses.
He's 26, so he's still young. But the $230 million over 5 years is so fascinating to me. The fact that it's fully guaranteed, the fact that they thought ahead enough to say, what if this guy gets suspended? His agents were smart enough to say, for 2022, his salary, $1.1 million is salary. The rest is a signing bonus. So if he gets suspended,
oh, that's standard.
Well, no, because if he gets suspended, all he loses is the million.
Right. But I'm saying the offset salary caps, you're always going to get a big chunk of that money.
No, I understand that, but you have to understand that even with the offset, right, it's still going to be roughly a $43-44 million hit against the cap.
I guess it boils down to this, Big John. Do you think he's a top 3 NFL quarterback? Because that's where his salary rates him right now.
Actually, he's number 1.
Rodgers is number 1 with $50 million a year. And actually, Watson's technically the second highest paid quarterback now.
Right.
No Super Bowls, no winning season. Or, I mean, no winning playoff games. Fully guaranteed $230 million. Yeah. The package they gave away to the Texans, I agree with. Yeah. I'm with you. I would have had structured that with incentives. Even if they, and when I say incentives, sometimes teams will put unrealistic incentives in there, or, you know, you, like for example, with one of the NCAA coaches, I think at Kentucky, he had like a $1 million bonus or one of those teams if they won it all.
Those are
unrealistic. I mean, because they're kind of out of your control. It's a team function.
Sure.
But I would have put in maybe some realistic individual goals.
I hear what you're saying, but here's the problem. The problem is that what they've done by fully guaranteeing, especially this season, this is the part that I think most people aren't talking about, and I've heard a lot of like the ESPN, the NFL Network, and all these guys go off about this. The one thing I haven't heard is the incentive for Watson to settle those 22 civil cases just flew out the window, meaning that he could have gotten his money, but if 2022 weren't essentially fully guaranteed for his salary, he had a reason to settle those lawsuits. Because remember, once the criminal phase is gone, he's not going to jail. The NFL really can't look at him and say, well, you're being suspended for violation of the law. They can't do that. So they have
to do it. They don't have to do that.
Right. They're going to get him on the personal conduct.
Right.
Now, if that money isn't fully guaranteed, he has a reason. He has a financial reason to settle with those 22 cases to say, hey, people don't want to hear this. But those 22 women in the civil cases are not looking for justice. They're looking for money.
Right. And the threshold is much lower.
And it's much lower. You don't need
conviction is the wrong word, but guilty of whatever they're.
Yeah. So to find him liable, I think is the right phrase. You don't need a unanimous jury. You just need the majority. So if there's 9 people or 13, I forget what it is in a civil case.
Yeah.
All you need is the majority. So if 7 of 13 say pay him, and by the way, they can adjust the award. So if a woman is asking for $10 million. Yeah, they could, like, you know, they could lower it to $1 or they could, you know, whatever. So for him, since, you know, and nobody's accusing women of anything, of lying. I'm just saying the civil phase is about money. That's it. So what he could do is settle the cases, put in a requirement that nobody discloses anything and there's no admission of guilt, just like, here's some money so you go away. If he did that in all 22 cases before the season started, I think that suspension is less likely to be severe. He had a financial incentive to do it. Now he doesn't have to do it anymore because that salary is guaranteed.
Here's why he's going to do it. It's not about this contract. That's this moment in time. It's about his legacy, his ego. Most importantly, it's about PR. So if he goes to civil trial and some nasty, nasty sailor-type details start coming out, doesn't matter if it's legal or not. You know, and I'm not going to gross our audience out, but just think of some of the worst sexual acts that's not illegal, but people do. When that stuff comes out, it becomes a PR nightmare. You know, because he's becoming a brand. So when the team, the agents, and the lawyers, individual. He's been cited. And the only thing he did wrong, the only thing that he did that was questionable to somebody, didn't hurt him, was taking a fifth with the grand jury.
Yeah, he was smart like that. He listened to his lawyer.
So he's not dumb.
But William, I have to push back a little bit because I don't know if it's about his legacy at this point. I'm not going to question whether he wants to win a Super Bowl ring or not. But here's the thing.
We all have egos. And I'm not talking about
his legacy. I understand.
No. You missed my point.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about his on-the-field legacy. We're talking money now. John, in the last 10 years, the NFL has changed.
Yeah.
For the elite players, we're talking generational money they're receiving.
Yes, yes.
They're no longer looking at life as an individual, but they look at themselves as a brand. They are no different than that rich, white oligarch out of whatever country who wants that hospital named after him. That's what I'm referring to.
I don't disagree with you with that, but here's the thing. People have short memories. In 2 years, if he keeps his nose clean, nobody's going to remember these 22
women. We're not talking short memories. We're talking multiple upcoming potential civil litigations.
No,
right.
But I'm saying
we have a short memory.
I'm saying
this isn't done. This isn't over. In 2 years, this is going to still be there.
No. If he settles,
it won't be.
Part of the agreement, I can almost guarantee you, will be. This is the end of it. You can't talk about it. I'm gonna tweak you a little bit, right? Your boy Trump does that all the time. Any lawsuit against him that he loses, if he's forced to pay up, right, he just throws something in. Okay, this money gets refunded if you ever discuss details about this again.
I get that, Big John. And you're right. Trump is notorious for that. He's notorious for suing the small. That's why he does business with other with smaller companies. You can write them out financially if you have to.
Right.
They all do that. It doesn't matter if it's Jose Joe Blow in the barrio or whoever's in the ghetto or the trailer park.
Yeah.
Any non-disclosure from that level on up is going to be you don't discuss this.
Right.
The problem I have with that, and we probably need to move on. We're getting too deep.
I got you. Let's finish up the point.
But the problem we have with that is we live in an era where women are breaking this, mostly women. I'm sure there's some men, but mostly women in terms of what we see in the news are breaking this, and they're not having to deal with ramifications, at least that we see.
You might be talking about someone like a Stormy Daniels who had an NDA.
Oh, anybody. It depends on
but you're right. You're
it depends
right.
on how big the individual is and what they're breaking.
And whether the punishment for breaking the NDA is sufficient to dissuade them from doing it. Right. Okay.
Exactly.
Let's move on. Let me ask you this now. The fact that the Browns – now, remember, initially last week we heard – that Watson and his agent had notified the Browns that they were out of the running. And even though this was a trade, essentially it was a free agent signing because of Watson's no trade clause. So it's not like the Texans could have just given him up to the highest bidder. Watson had to agree to go to the team that he was going to be traded
to. Right.
So what do you make of the fact of two things I want to ask you? The first one is, do you think the Browns improved their chances of getting to the Super Bowl? Do they have a Super Bowl roster? And let me give you a little fact here. Vegas, the second the trade was announced, Vegas moved the Browns from 40-1 favorites to win the Super Bowl to 16-1 favorites to win the Super Bowl. So Vegas, and we know how they are with their analytics and probability structures, we know that now Vegas says, hey, Cleveland doubled its chance of getting to the Super Bowl.
Has Vegas actually gotten the Super Bowl winner right? I mean, they always have all the odds.
They have the odds, right. So it's a predictive, you know.
No, I get that. But it's like, I wonder.
Do they get it right? They usually rank the guys appropriately. Whether they get the exact one right, obviously.
I don't look for them to get anything specifically right.
It's always, I think the Rams were the fifth most likely to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm talking about. Have they ever? Close enough.
But using it as a...
It's not close enough when you put $100,000 on the
Rams. Here's the thing I wanted to ask you. Vegas thinks that they essentially doubled their probability of getting to the Super Bowl. They doubled their probability of getting to the Super Bowl. Do you think the Watson deal gets them that much closer? They're also the favorites to win the AFC Central, meaning the AFC North, meaning that they leapfrog the Bengals in that scenario. Right. Do you agree with that, or do you think Cleveland still needs to make some major moves to that roster?
Nah, I mean, these numbers will change tomorrow. You know, they'll get a free agent signing is going to tweak it elsewhere. So my point is, it's too early to tell. Did they now, in general terms, did they upgrade their team? Oh, heck yeah. Deshaun Watson is magical when healthy. He's unproven. So still a lot of potential, still a lot of talent. And let's be honest, you know, he's a rushing QB. People forget the simple factors of humanity, human nature, the environment, life. He's gone from playing in Houston in a controlled environment to he's going to be facing some brutal winters. The hits are harder because it's colder, so they hurt more, they linger longer. People don't realize that the NFL is a game of attrition. You know, when we were kids, it was magical to watch Fran Tarkenton and then his replacement, I don't know, Big Gun, Tommy Kramer in the playoffs, always in dead of winter.
In the snow. Yeah.
And that's what you get with the Browns. So I would disagree with Cleveland as they're not factoring a lot of factors like that in, but have they exponentially leaped above where they were with Baker Mayfield? True, I think they have on the surface. We're going to dig into Baker Mayfield a little bit because I found his numbers, not his numbers, but who he is, a bit surprising.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to push back a little bit on you. I wouldn't categorize Watson as a rushing quarterback. I don't view him in that category. I think he's capable of running.
Did I say rushing? He's a mobile QB.
He's a mobile QB. Better.
There's a massive difference.
I agree with you. I just want to correct you. You said rushing, but if you meant mobile, yes, absolutely.
When I say rushing quarterback, I mean he can use his legs.
Right. Yeah. Meaning, you don't view him like a Lamar Jackson or a Kyler Murray. You view him more like a Patrick Mahomes who can get away from trouble, or maybe
he's quasi. He's still learning that. I mean, the guy's had an ACL tear, so he's not the most durable. Of course, nobody is. But in fact, the point is, he's already been injured.
But I love his arm. He throws a nice deep ball. I love his arm, and I also love his accuracy too. I like that.
Getting back to answer your question. I think they have improved. Look at this offense they have: Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. I mean, hell, the Watson and Hunt brothers beating him down. Amari Cooper.
I got that joke.
Amari Cooper has a legit opportunity to go from a lower end NFL and fantasy lower number one tier receiver to moving up. And on defense, Myles Garrett, Denzel Ward. Myles Garrett. You know, so they got studs on defense. They've got playmakers on defense is what I'm trying to say. So they have gaps to fill. He also has to learn a new offense. You know, his intellectual prowess should help him out there.
Yeah.
But it's also an offense built on play action pass, which he was helpful. Each year he did less and less of. Without it really affecting his numbers. So do they really need that kind of offense? So I expect them to tweak the offense, which means everybody who's coming back is going to have to semi-learn new plays and nuances of the playbook as well. So
And that's also why I like the fact that they got this done when they did. It gives them the full breadth of the offseason. Now, the one thing I will add, I do think they need another wide receiver because they've got Cooper. They've got Peoples-Jones probably as their number two.
Yeah. Their offense is not complete yet.
Right.
And because of that, and because it's a new offense, I mean a new player, do not be shocked if you see him perform with lesser than stellar numbers because the Browns believe this. They believe their window to win is this year and next year with Baker Mayfield had he stayed. With Watson, they're assuming they're going to win, so they view themselves as now legit players. That bears to be seen, but their offensive, his production, I would speculate is going to, they're going to play it close to the vest and rely on that dynamic duo running team as the receivers gel. But don't be shocked they bring in a quality number two free, a Jarvis Landry type is what they need.
Even though they just let him go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So let me just move on now. Baker Mayfield, had requested to be traded because he felt he was being disrespected, quote unquote, whatever that means. Fair enough. Baker Mayfield is probably gone, 99% likely to be gone, I would assume.
Oh, I'd hold out. I'm saying
99 because things you never know, right?
Never know.
Okay. He says he wants to go to the Colts. First of all, I don't think the Colts want him. That's the first thing. The second thing is, who knows what the Browns are going to get in return for him. I don't think they're going to get a first-rounder. They're probably not even going to get a second-rounder. They'll be lucky to get a third-rounder for Mayfield at this point.
Mayfield will be layered, meaning his production, once he goes to his other team, will determine if they get a first-round pick or not.
Another Wentz, which I doubt. He might be more like a Trubisky, where he goes somewhere to sign on as a backup on a one-year deal or something like that. But three teams, and then quickly tell me where you think he might fit best. The Colts, the Seahawks, and the Panthers have all been mentioned. Or do you feel he just decides to sign as a backup somewhere? Give me your thoughts.
I have no clue. He wants to go somewhere where he can start. He wants to go to the Colts. The Colts haven't said anything. The Seahawks have actually reached out. If I'm him, I don't want to go to a Pete Carroll offense. He chews you out and spits you out, and we've seen that team. That team should have been Super Bowl ready for a couple more years in Seattle. You know, he's young. He needs every day the same thing.
He needs consistency. He needs reps.
No, and I'm not talking his play. He had multiple head coaches, multiple coordinators. You know, he tore his labrum in week two. He re-aggravated it in week four.
Right.
He lost OBJ in the middle of the season. You know, right tackle Jack Compton went down.
He's had a hard time. I agree with you. He's had a rough time in Cleveland.
And that's my whole point. So,
what about his maturity, though, William? Let me focus.
He was all in. He's a young kid. There's always going to be maturity issues.
What about the antics? What about the planting the flag, the bold statements, the preening, the planting?
That's leadership to his players.
I'm just asking you.
They fall in line with it. The problem is, to be a leader, you must have what? Or you must be what? A winner.
Gotcha. Yeah. So what do you think about all the reports that the locker room was basically 50-50 on Mayfield? Half loved him, half didn't.
There's a reason they got rid of OBJ. And there's a reason the Rams aren't saying we're going to sign OBJ come hell or high water because of that knee. He's got a reputation. Jarvis Landry was OBJ's boy. So at the end of the day, that's a coaching issue, meaning you have to be able to understand what you're getting when you bring them in. And they did not.
Is it interesting to you that the Texans didn't take Mayfield as part of that trade?
I think, not at all. For the simple fact, if I'm Baker Mayfield and they go, you're part of this trade, I go, I'm just not reporting.
He'd rather not report than be a starter.
Baker Mayfield is not dumb neither. His agent saw OBJ say, I want out and I'm getting out, period. And he got out.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
Yes.
One word answer. If you had to put money, where's he going to end up in 2022, Baker Mayfield?
Oh, I have no clue. That's how
I know you don't have a clue. I'm asking you to make an educated guess.
He could go anywhere. He could go to the hell.
Right, I'll do it for you. I'll say Panthers. I think he ends up on the Panthers. That's my guess. I think he ends up on the Panthers.
Sam Darnold. They have Sam Darnold. Right? It's the same thing. You know, why go there?
I think he ends up because I think they need someone for 1 year until because they're probably going to draft Willis in the draft. And they need somebody for 1 year. But anyway, let's move on for the sake of time. The second big trade, William, that we have to discuss, and you and I have gone over this situation in past shows in Green Bay, Davante Adams gets traded from the Packers to the Raiders for a first and a second, signs a $145 million contract as soon as the trade was finalized. He is thrilled over this. He's doing cartwheels because he's reunited with his best friend and college quarterback at Fresno State, Derek Carr. What do you make of the situation going on?
Hogwash that they're saying that, well, that's why we traded him, because he was insistent on playing with David Carr. It was a non-exclusive franchise tag, and he told the team, hey, I'm not going to play on a franchise
tag.
And I really think Gutekunst probably thought, hey, Rogers can help smooth it over. We'll ask him to take the team-friendly contract. We'll play it just like that we did with Greg Jennings. Greg Jennings walked, but meaning that was their stance. You know, but a report did come out stating that they never viewed them as a 1-2 punch when it came to the administrative side, i.e. the contract dealings. So their only care at that time was to solve Rogers. And then what was left over, then they would look at Adams. And obviously it burned them. You know, it's he wasn't going to play with franchise tag.
Understood. So, we both kind of said that.
Because of that, they felt if we trade him, we can recoup some picks, and they did, you know.
But
they got the Raiders' first round pick and their second round pick in the 2022 draft, the number 22 overall and number 53 overall. That gives them four picks in the top 60, you know, because they already had the number 28 and number 53. So they're going to, logic dictates they are going to look for a receiver there. But the problem is. The ability.
There's no Davante Adams. Yeah, there's no Davante Adams.
Well, it's not. They know that, but they've got to be able to find somebody who can post up some of those numbers.
All right, so let me ask you something on that issue, right? We both knew he wasn't going to play for the Packers again. I think both of you and I thought that was going to be the case. But let me ask you this. If they knew they were going to trade him, if they knew they were going to let him walk, there's two issues that are contradictory to that. One is, the reports were, take them for what they're worth, that the Packers offered him as much money, if not more, than the Raiders did. What do you make of that?
I think that's a complete and utter lie.
You think it's a lie? You don't think?
Oh, yeah.
You don't
because if they had, they could have franchise tagged him and said, hey, here's more money. We're giving you a better deal. Look, teams franchise tag players that they want to keep or work out a trade and ship off. You know, so no, if they really wanted to keep him, they would have kept him.
No. They offered him the money. That's been like
their sources.
But, I mean, look, I just think the feeling was he didn't want to play for Green Bay anymore. He didn't want to be with Rodgers. He didn't want to be in Green Bay. He didn't want to be in the cold. I understand that part.
Not until this past week. That's why I find it hard to believe.
No, I'm saying that's what the reports were, right? The second thing is, I don't understand something that's going on here. There's something going on in Green Bay that either reeks of incompetence or there's something else that's going to happen that we don't know about yet. What I mean by that is, first of all, if you regress this enough, they screw up the whole situation with Rodgers. The Green Bay front office put themselves in this position, right? And it started with Jordan Love. It started with letting Rodgers dictate to them. They should have either made him happy 2 years ago or they should have gotten rid of him 2 years ago, one or the other. But having that they came to this point, William, they paid him this ton of money. They didn't pay them this money to be contenders 3 years from now. They paid him this money to be contenders now.
And that's why it went down as it went down.
How do you account then for the fact that they did not get Davante Adams done?
Because they plan. This is what I think happened. I agree with you. Your whole synopsis. That's been my issue with the Packers. They, when they had a running game, they had no defense. When they had no defense, they had no. You know, it's always been one misstep or another. So when you look at this trade, they knew they were going to have to pay out to get Rodgers. It turns out Rodgers was showing me the money. So they're like, we have to win now, and we're going to show them the money. That leaves a team just decimated with even more salary cap woes because you can't sign quality depth. They got enough salary cap leverage to be competitive, but still not enough salary cap leverage to sit there and make a legit Super Bowl run and win. Because NFL, I always say, is attrition. Even if your starters are out there right. at the Super Bowl, odds are they miss games down there. That's what
there's injuries, of course.
So with that said, I think Gutekunst may have known, hey, look, we're not going to be able to keep Adams with the contract we're giving Rodgers. Let's find the best deal out there for him. What?
What's that?
Carr? He wants to play with Carr again? Okay, let's call the Raiders up. Or the Raiders call them up. You know, one or the other. And they managed to get, hold on, four picks in the top 60. They get to keep their secondary intact. Now they have enough money and draft picks to kind of find some depth. Some quality depth. So see, I don't think they planned this out, but
right,
I think
no, this
how they played
yeah.
out, and they yeah, made yeah. the surprisingly they made the best of a
no,
situation.
They didn't. Here's my thing. I don't think they did make the best of it because let
no,
me
no,
ask
no.
this.
They
let
made the best of the situation.
No, but I'm saying I don't think they did because let me ask you this. He was a non-exclusive franchise tag, which
right.
means if the Raiders they could have let the Raiders offer Adams the contract, they could have refused to match, and they would have gotten two firsts as compensation.
Right, right, but where those fell, who knows?
Why didn't they go for that? They could have had two first-round picks. Like, in any value chart you see, two firsts are worth more than a first and a second.
But they got that in a trade. They would have gotten it regardless.
No, yeah. because they got a first and a second.
Oh, that's right. I'm thinking of Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, if they refused, they would have gotten two firsts. So I don't understand what's going on there. Like, I mean, so to me, something else is going on. It's either incompetence, meaning that that they just didn't think of this, which I refuse to believe at that level, or B, is there some sort of collusion going on?
Would they have gotten two first rounds for him?
Yes.
Doesn't it depend where he was drafted at?
No. They would have got – because they tendered him as a non-exclusive – franchise.
Well, they
were
once they franchise tagged him. That's
yeah.
correct.
They would have gotten.
You know, there's got to be something in there.
That's what I'm saying. There's got to be something. Now, it could be a and you know how I hate conspiracy theories, but maybe there's something else going on here. Like maybe the Raiders were hip to this. Maybe Adams called the Raiders and said, "Hey, I'm not going to sign with them. I want to come play for you. Don't even make an offer on me because they'll have to trade me to you for cheaper than the two first." Maybe something like that was going on. Or B. Maybe the Packers are just as incompetent as they seem to be when it comes to negotiating contracts. Like, I refuse to buy into this concept that the Packers are geniuses. The front office.
I don't think there's any NFL team that I would call a genius, including Bill Belichick, who did better when he wasn't the general manager than when he was, you know? So,
Well, Parcells was just a horrible front office guy. As brilliant as he was as a coach, he was
Belichick.
A horrible front office guy.
So was Parcells.
So was Parcells and Belichick.
So,
right.
They all are, even Jimmy yeah. Williams or Jimmy Johnson. Yeah.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. The Packers, they can't stand Pat, right? The only guys they have under contract for you know, as terms of receivers are Alan Lazard that they just re-signed, Robert Tonyan, who's coming off a torn up knee at tight end. People think Valdez Scandling is coming back. He's a free agent. I'm not sure he's coming back to the Packers. He may not want any part of that either. So now you're left with the thing. And the Packers traditionally do not draft wide receivers in the first round.
I don't think they're going to have a choice, especially since that's what Rodgers wanted the last go round. I don't think
right. And both their picks in the first round, both theirs and the Raiders, since they were both playoff teams, are at the end of the first round. So you would think that any impact receivers that might be out there, and it's a deep receiver class, but I don't know how many true number one receivers are out there. If there's one, two, or three of them, they're probably gone by the time they're choosing in the first round. So.
Right.
The question is, do you think, and this is part of saying, like, I don't know what's up next, do you think they're putting together a package to get to trade for an impact receiver? For example, the first thing that pops into my mind is, if the Seahawks are rebuilding, they can move either Metcalf or Lockett or both for picks. Do you think we see something in the coming weeks of especially as we get closer to the draft? Do we see the Packers? Do we see Aaron Rodgers complaining and bitching about make a trade, get me somebody, maybe taking two firsts or a first and a second, sending it to Seattle, picking up a DK Metcalf who is younger. He's a stud. I'm sure Rodgers would love playing for a DK
Metcalf. That won't come from Seattle. Seattle thinks they're not in a rebuild. And when you sit there and read some of the articles, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. Then you take a step back and you're like, well, you just gave up a freaking generational quarterback.
So what do you think about that?
I agree with you. I agree. However, I think they are first going to take care of their in-house free agents. For example, with the cornerback there. What's his name?
Rasul Douglas.
There you go. They're gonna, you know, if they haven't already taken, maybe the last couple of days they took care of him. Who knows?
They haven't.
Okay. So they're going to take care of him and keep that core intact, core of three. Then that makes them top upper echelon in the backfield. So I think that's what they're going to do first. Now I agree with you, but you didn't mention one name that I don't know if it's just all talk or if they would consider it, and that's packaging Jordan Love. You know, so they have Rodgers for 2 years, and they want to win now. So if you want to win now, Jordan Love's like the type of guy that's worth trading for.
Interest in Love?
But yes, there would be interest in Love for everything I've read about Love is even to this day, people are like, boy, wait till he gets on that field consistently. They in fact, one article said if you guys thought Trey Lance is something, wait till you see Jordan Love in action.
All right, but what are you going to get for him though? What are you going to get for him?
And that's the thing is, he has to go to the right fit. The Colts, for example, would be one destination. The Texans, teams in rebuild mode.
How does that help the Packers? How does it help Rodgers win?
Draft picks and their player.
That's but it doesn't help them win now.
Not necessarily. Yeah, it does. If they're able to package him for, like you said, I don't think he has a new trade, but they can get a Metcalf-type player somewhere else. And you know what? What's the matter with there are plenty of Jarvis Landrys out there, but they need a number one. I get it. And while he can't be a number one, Rodgers can spread that ball around. He's great with his reads. So I guess what I'm trying to tell you is there is no A-plus answer here. And let me remind you of this. Yeah. Hold on. Let me remind you of this. I just wrote an article on him, so I'm very, very understanding of his college days to his pro days, and that's Amari Cooper. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who you draft or the receiver you get from a different system, it's never a guarantee it's going to work.
Agreed.
So hold on. So this number two receiver on team, whatchamacallit, could come in and be a wide receiver killer in their system.
I understand that part, William, but I still think they need to make Rodgers happy. So I don't know who Rodgers. Listen.
I don't think it's about Rodgers happy. This is what Gutekunst can now say. We gave you $50 million dollars a year. Just shut the fuck up. Excuse my French people. Because what's Rodgers going to do now?
Fair enough. Look, I don't think he cares, but here's the thing. I think they go and get a receiver for him, whether it's Brandon Cooks from Houston if they're in a rebuild.
You send him
a mid-round pick. Maybe you do sign Jarvis
Landry. Hold on. The Saints need a quarterback. Yeah.
Well, they're going to sign Jameis Winston probably.
I get that, but they still need a quarterback. Hold on.
Fair enough.
Stop. You just sat there and said, no, they're going to sign Jameis Winston. Did we foresee the Deshaun Watson to the Browns deal a day ago?
No, and we admit there's things happening that we don't know. But let's move on very quickly, and I need just one or two sentences from you. How does this make the Raiders in the AFC West? How does that change their chances of winning? Let's face it, the AFC West, best division in football, right? Between the Chiefs, the Raiders, the Broncos, the Chargers. Oh, my goodness. I could just watch all their games and be happy next season, right?
I thought it was the Jaguars and the Colts were representing the – no, look, the Raiders
are not – how did the Raiders improve?
Now they can compete to win. Look, I'm sorry. Everybody kept saying that's the best, and it is. The best three teams in there. The Raiders were that falling to the back team. Why? It's the culture. They have a terrible culture. They don't even know how to win yet. Even though, I mean, they backdoored it into the playoffs last year.
Right.
So they kind of did it more because of the Chargers. And my point isn't the bag on the Raiders. My point is just to say they were nowhere near where people thought they were. However, Devontae Adams helped make them competitive to compete in that division. And the reason I say that is because of the connection they had in Fresno. It was clear as day, and a situation that they already had chemistry. You know, now his receiver, now what he also adds to the table is, who are you going to cover? You know, you got that tight end, Darren Waller. He's an elite tight end.
Yeah.
So you got a 1-2 punch. And then there's Hunter Renfro, who's that slot receiver. And he's one of the better slot receivers. So, and they've got a solid running game. They've got what I believe is an underrated quarterback. People love that. I mean,
I don't know why.
Why do they hate David Carr so much?
Derek, you keep saying that.
Derek Carr.
Derek Carr to me has been crapped on so much. If he wasn't such a devout Christian, I would have expected him to lose his mind by now.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he's a very devout Christian.
I know. As a matter of fact, his brother is.
Davante Adams referred to him. It was funny during a press conference back in Fresno State. He goes, "I came here because of my boy Jesus," and they said, "Well, who's Jesus?" And he said, "Derek Carr." You know, so he was joking even back then.
The thing is, receiver cannot make a team. Receiver can only complement, and it can move a team up a few tiers. But the team's truly made by the quarterback.
And don't forget, they added Chandler Jones.
Yes.
And they traded for Rock Ya-Sin to help the back end. So between Crosby and Chandler Jones, they have a great pass rush now, which you and I think is one of the underrated keys to winning a championship. They solidified the secondary a little bit more by picking up Rock Ya-Sin. They still have their picks this year. Granted, no first, no second, but they'll make some moves. I think is it enough to beat the Chiefs? I don't know. But
Here's why. Well, it's not just that, John. Look, the Philadelphia Eagles could be 0-15 and facing the 13-2 Giants. And you know good and well, deep down, there's a little nervousness.
Sure. It's a rivalry. Yeah.
So I know that division only because I moved out here to San Diego, so I've been force-fed it. That truly is that type of division.
Right.
So not only now are they competitive with Davante Adams, now they're competitive to the point with the other additions. It is a 4-team race. I do think Adams made him a 4-team race. Real quick, I want to compare some numbers in terms of people are criticizing Adams and what he's getting. Compared with the numbers players are getting, that's well-earned. Amari Cooper, again, is a great lower number one fantasy receiver and NFL receiver. Davante Adams' 2021 breakdown was 21.3 fantasy points per game. You know, Amari Cooper's 2021 breakdown was 13.6 fantasy points. That's easily a touchdown more in general terms. That shows the value he's going to bring to fantasy owners. And it's also true, I didn't speak about the actual numbers, but trust me, it translates to upper elite NFL echelon.
I agree with you 100%. I think the Raiders did themselves really well by making that trade. I think it was
blockbuster. And I'm happy for Davante Adams. Receivers cannot win a Super Bowl or win big games, but they are a cog in that offense, and he's earned his lot there.
And at the risk of doing something I hate doing, which is to use a noun as a verb, he was disrespected. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind he was disrespected. Okay, let's move on. NFL free agency. Let's talk about that. And here I'm going to focus on two or three under the radar, but I think sneaky good additions. The first one is somebody we talked about as a possibility for Aaron Rodgers, and we were wondering, why don't you go sign this guy? Juju Smith-Schuster signed with the Chiefs on a one-year prove-it deal. 1 year, $10.75 million, William, to go play with Patrick Mahomes. Now, if you recall, last season he turned down Mahomes to go to Kansas City to stay in Pittsburgh. Juju Smith is going to go to Kansas City. He's still only 25, William. What do you think of this move? I love this move by the Chiefs. They haven't made a lot of moves this offseason, but I love this one.
I think at its core, Mike Tomlin is a disciplinarian / players coach, one of the rarities. But he's kind of lost control of some players the last 3 to 4 years. Antonio Brown, Juju Schuster. Juju Schuster's a nightmare. He's a disgrace to the game today.
Really?
I mean, in terms of his antics, he's a disgrace, to his fellow players. You know, his lack of attitude. He has a lot of attitude, but not the right attitude. I mean, there was that game on Monday night or Thursday night football. And as you know, I haven't played fantasy football
where
in a while.
He danced on the logo or whatever.
Well, it's not even that. It's they were down. They were down like a couple of TDs or something. He gets a, I mean, the way he acts, he doesn't think. But that said, he's going to a team of current stars in their prime. Remember, the Steelers haven't won anything in years.
Right.
You know? But the Chiefs are in their winning prime. So not only is it Mahomes, who's going, no injury, he's going to go down as one of the greatest. Then you have Travis Kelce. Then you have Tyreek Hill. Juju, you may be fast, but there's some real speed. So he has a lot of players who go, don't talk to me. You go sit in your corner. In terms of what I'm saying, when push comes to shove. So hopefully that can help mature him. So even though he was an idiot with the Steelers, That's the immaturity of a player who is not a leader, who is not expected to be a leader, but leadership chooses not to wrangle him and get him under control for some reason. I think that'll happen with the Chiefs. So I do think it's a great signing. Honestly, I think the Chiefs have always lacked that exceptional number two wideout,
yeah,
to complement Tyreek Hill. Yeah. Because I think the tight end, when you have, I think the tight end, Travis Kelce, Anthony Gonzalez retired, great player, those types of tight ends, when you have an actual legit one and two, that tight end all of a sudden becomes the monster.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt. No doubt.
With Juju Schuster, if he can continue to develop physically on the field, he's going to make Kelce a bigger tight end monster, I believe.
And I agree with you, and I think that's the key. Juju Smith, first of all, I don't necessarily agree with you that he's a disgrace, to use your word. He's a young guy.
Still a teammate, yeah.
He's still only 25.
Doesn't matter.
No, I'm just I think a lot of it is childish, but I don't know if it's a disgrace. But anyway, that aside, he did his best work in Pittsburgh when he was the number two. When he had Antonio Brown be the number one, that's when he took the world by storm. I think he moves to Kansas City. Like you said, there's established stars there. He doesn't have to be the number one. He's going to be the clear number two behind Hill. He might even be number three behind Kelce as well, and he probably will be.
Oh, no, I think he will be. But he's a threat, and they have to cover
him. He's a super threat, and that's why I think this, for a almost $11 million investment, this was a great signing by the Chiefs. They didn't spend a lot. They don't have a lot of money tied into him beyond the 2022 season, or none at all. So I think this is a great opportunity for Juju Smith to rehabilitate himself, to prove himself worthy. And, you know, if he does well in Kansas City, let's assume they win the Super Bowl or make it to the Super Bowl, then he has an opportunity to at only 26, be a part of that franchise's future for a while. Two more that I want to hit you up with.
Well, hold on. Well, we cannot ignore the fantasy spots. We need to make sure we cover that.
Yeah.
He's going to be overvalued in the fantasy world, I think.
Probably.
Because of what you just said.
Probably.
I think he will be number three. But when you look at him, if he falls to you, pick him up. If he doesn't, let somebody else ride the lower.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You have to take things in context. And usually I'll write an article every year, giving how to evaluate positions and players. But anyway, so that's a good point, but we were obviously talking more about football. Let's talk about two tight ends now, again, that I think help their teams, but again, under the radar. One is Hayden Hurst signing with the Bengals. Hayden Hurst, a former first-round pick of the Ravens, got traded to Atlanta, had a little bit of success there before they drafted Kyle Pitts, and obviously once Pitts was taken, Hurst's productivity went down. I think he goes to Cincinnati. Again, not expected to be a big player there in terms of contribution, but I think his skill set works out well. He's a great replacement for C.J. Uzuma, who signed with the Jets. I think with Joe Burrow there, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, I think there's an opportunity, like you said, William, when you've got all these great receivers on the outside and in the slot, who becomes a killer in the red zone? The tight end. The tight end becomes your number one, like, destructive element inside that red zone. So I like that Hurst going to the Bengals. And then the second one was Austin Hooper. He got cut by the Browns in a salary cap move. They decided to franchise tag the other tight end, Njoku, because he's younger and more athletic. Hooper, again, someone that I like for his route running and his hands, ends up going to the Titans. And the Titans were at their best offensively when they had Derrick Henry running the rock. Obviously, he's going to still be the focus. But when Tannehill had someone to throw to, it was also that he had Brown, but he didn't have a second wide receiver. Who was his other option? The tight end, whether it was Jonnu Smith or I forget his name right now, number 46. I could see him in my mind. But he always had a good pass-catching tight end. I think this year, if he's going to have Hooper in there, I think that reestablishes that type of offense. So I like that signing of Hooper to the Titans. What do you think?
Ditto. You've covered it all there, brother. I agree. Look, in today's NFL, it's incumbent to keep that defense guessing, because if a defense has a great edge rusher, that can really screw it up. So when you're able to make your read and know every read you make with the first open guy, including the tight end, is a viable option. The pressure and the quick release, well, the release is so much more pleasurable.
Oh, man, you're full of the double entendres today. Let's not say any more. That was perfect.
As far as the Titans, I agree again. Look, Ryan Tannehill, I don't like Tannehill. But that said, I'm harsher on Tannehill than his actual playing ability. He plays better than I want to give him credit for.
Right.
I don't fault that interception that cost him the game with the Bengals. People don't realize a play earlier, he had just zipped one straight on in, and the guy caught it. So, of course, I got the confidence. That happens. I don't think the Titans have done enough to build a team around him as a quarterback. It was an embarrassment. When I saw that trade for Julio Jones, all you were trading for was a has-been name, and I was proven right.
Right.
You know, so bringing this tight end in, I think, is another good move. I wouldn't be shocked to see the Titans make a play for a Garoppolo, too, at that time. But at the end of the day, the Titans have improved their offense, and they have to, because Derrick Henry is 2 years removed now from that 2000 season, and cowbell backs like him, they have an extremely limited shelf life.
Sure, and obviously the injury last year might be something that portends that. Okay, very quickly now, let's move on to one of your favorite topics. And I'm going to let you talk about this because I know you love railing about him. Jussie Smollett.
You know, my issue.
The latest developments on the Smollett front. Let's go, William. What do you have?
Well, first of all, my issues with identity politics, for those who don't know, is I come from a very diverse family. I have relatives who are from white to black to white, gay to straight to gay, rich to poor, to uber poor to millionaires. You know, so we run the gamut. So when all this identity politics, I took a great affront to it because I'm like, you're trying to separate my family. You're trying to sit there and tell my grandmother, who was called the N-word in the States, that she shouldn't acknowledge me because of my skin color. So that's why I got into politics. And America taught me equality. And that's all I look for is equality. You know, you treat criminals the same. You treat private citizens the same. So when I see Jussie Smollett, it's like he's being backed based off a racial issue, in a sense, his skin color, his gayness, all that means he's not guilty. It's like a pre-assumed innocence, not because of the evidence, but because of who and what he represents. And it happened again. You know, he's been let out on bond or bail, or whatever the term is, bond, I say, until his appeal. You know, there comes a time when you need to give it up, and this is why the left is strong. You're a libertarian, I'm a conservative. The left destroys us over and over because when they have their foot on our necks, they just kick it in even harder. And on the flip side, they will defend their issues to the death. And that's what you're seeing with Jussie Smollett. He's going to do his time. But this is just another ugly mark on society. There are a lot of ugly marks in society with Anglo-America throughout the world. That's because of strong take from the weak. And that's how we'll put us in this situation. Now it's being reversed. And they're using their strength to get their way. I'm not saying this is right or wrong. This is how I see the world. So Jussie Smollett is a tool in that battle. But it's aggravating to me because I'm like, if we can all just take a damn step back, regardless of color, and look at it. That's why, Big John, I do believe Latinos will lead the way, because our families tend to be extremely diverse in my eyes compared to what I see with the average American or the average Black family. We have a mix of it all. But yeah, Juicy Smollett got off, and you gave me a tidbit of news, because I hadn't been paying attention, that the two Nigerian brothers, Ola Binjo and Abimbola, are now in the shoe.
Osundero.
Osundaro. That's how I say it. But anyway, they're free to sue, and they're likely to win their lawsuit for the simple fact that a jury easily convicted Jussie Smollett.
Right, well, and their lawsuit just to be clear, their lawsuit was a defamation lawsuit.
Right, and they're still being defamed.
Right, because Smollett's attorney, her name was Tina Glandian, referred to them as being in whiteface.
Yeah.
So,
that's just the part of it, because at the end of the day, he's still sticking to his story.
Right.
And he's defaming them by, in essence, saying, no, they're liars.
Right.
So that's good news, because I do believe with suffering comes wisdom. I'm one of the few. I'm not one of these new agers or one of these socialists and all that who want to play the victim and make life easy. I'm like, I think a little suffrage in life makes us better human beings. I mean, for example, 30 years ago, how you and I are pods would be arguing at each other's throats and go, fuck you. Now we're like, we mature. We see how life is. That comes through both suffrage and age, and it gives us wisdom. And I think he has learned nothing. So I think losing a lawsuit, doing some jail time, maybe we may never see it, but there will be some introspective, is that the right word?
Introspection.
Look back at him within himself. So that's what I hope for. And that's all I have to say on Juicy Smollett, except I can't wait to see David Chappelle's latest stick on it.
See what he has to say. Absolutely. Okay, great. The last thing I want to move on to, William, some sad news. John Clayton, longtime national NFL reporter, started out as a Steelers beat writer, moved on to the Seahawks, then became a nationally known NFL guy for ESPN. Also starred in probably one of the top three commercials, those This Is Sports Center commercials, where he did his report, then he ripped off his suit and tie, and there was a Slayer T-shirt underneath, and he was out, eating Chinese food, yelling at his mother, "My segment's done, Ma," you know, things like that. So that was a funny commercial. But I didn't know John Clayton personally, but he reminded me of one of my friends and writers from back in the day at SportsCom. This guy, John Rakowski, was our stat master. The two of them looked very much similar, even though my friend John is something like maybe 25, 30 years younger than he is. But I understand you knew John Clayton personally. Tell us a little something about him.
Well, John Clayton, the thing about KFFL is we were groundbreaking. So I had no clue at first. None of us did. But it turned out we found out that agents, players, general managers, owners actually came to our Hot Off the Wire page. That's how fast we were with the news with the turnaround. So we were given access to all the events that now you and I probably wouldn't be able to get in. And that's how I met a lot of these individuals. And John Clayton, I met John Clayton, I want to say at the combine at first, maybe the Senior Bowl. So it was something like that. No, I met John Clayton at a fantasy football event in Seattle. I was invited up to, and I flew there, and it was the radio station that he would do his snippets on. And this was when he was still with ESPN, and he was just the nicest guy. And what was striking about him was the power of his wife. They were together. You could tell, but she watched over him. You could tell she was his protector. It's you just immediately felt that, but not in a negative way.
Right. In a loving way, you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. And John Clayton was never the epitome of physical strength. He was a kind of like a Barney Fife, a Don Knotts.
Right. I was going to say the word maybe that comes to mind is meek. He looked meek, like a meek person. I wouldn't even say sickly, just meek, you know, but not in the negative way, just physically. Like you said, he was a skinny guy, and
And then he got sick, like close to death sick, I want to say 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 to 20 years ago. And I was at the combine and I saw him. And, you know, we had only touched base a couple of times. And so, I'm pretty open, you know, and I went up to him, hey, John, you know, I'm just so sorry to hear, but I'm sorry, but I'm happy to see that you're, you know, I was truly heartfelt to see him because everybody loved him. He was just, right. He's what we always say. If you have a problem with John Clayton, you're the problem, not John Clayton. Right. And you know what? He sat there and turned around. He immediately said, thank you. Then he said, how's it feel to be still having all the success you are here at the combine with you? He turned it right around on me. You know, like, hey, tell me about how you're doing. So, and I saw him. There was usually a cordial, hey, how you doing? He was a busy man. There was always people around him, and he was always going for that big story. I did not know he was part of Pittsburgh. All I'd known from John Clayton was ESPN and Seattle. Right. So I wasn't aware of that. But he did break. He was one who, I believe, broke the Russell Wilson story 10 days ago. So he was still breaking stories. So, it's sad, but I truly believe he's now peaceful, away from the pain that he felt. He died at a young 67. In my eyes, 67 is still young.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel for his wife, his family, and I'm sure they're mourning, as is the NFL world and anybody who knew him. So I wish you could have met him. One of the nicest. We know this is a cutthroat business.
Yes.
We know the moment we turn our backs, there's a knife in it by somebody who wants a story. John Clayton epitomized none of that, but the exact opposite. And I was kind of angry at ESPN when they let him go. I have no reason why. I don't know why. I assume it was probably salary, and they had a Schefter really breaking, in with the – new, out with the old. But I thought he was an icon because he meant more to ESPN and their persona and their image. He was a guy who you want to have on your side for PR purposes. So when he was like, oh, it was a stunning move in my eyes.
Yeah. Well, rest in peace, John Clayton. Certainly will be missed. Okay, William, that's the end of our podcast. It was great talking to you once again. Covering the two big trades, Deshaun Watson and Devontae Adams, also talking about Juicy Smollett and John Clayton, some remembrances, as well as other NFL free agents going on. And on that note, thank you everyone for joining us right here on Putting Points on the Board podcast. Don't forget, visit sportsgrumblings.com every chance you get. Why not? And until next time, for William Del Pilar, this is Big John. Catch you next time, America.